Hello and welcome to Great Tracks and Sidetracks. A blink of the eye and another week's gone by. It's incredible, isn't it? Anyway, here I am again. It's Peter Fleming with my weekly dose of Great Tracks and Sidetracks. And if you've been listening recently, you'll know that my Great Tracks I am basing on the Great American Songbook. I've been gradually working through it, and it's incredible that the number of variations, and there are a number of covers there are for any particular track. So what I've been doing is picking out one track each time. But in the future, I'm very tempted to go back and not run every one again, but where there's interesting variations of artists who have recorded these tracks, we'll go and have a listen to those, shall we? That sounds all right to me. Sidetracks, well, you may be aware that I've run for many, many years on the International Express newspaper printed here in New Zealand, and I was able to get out funny little articles from that each week. Well, sadly, they've stopped producing it. So I'm having to sort of search elsewhere for my material. I've got two or three articles here which I've from my very last edition of the International Express, which was, I think, 3 or 4 weeks ago now. And then I'm going to use the internet and see what I can find on the Express digital version. So we'll have to see how that goes. But let's start with music then, because that's what the program is mainly about. And my first track this week is Just in Time, and this is a version by Willie Nelson.
Just in time, I found you just in time. Before you came, my time was running low. I was lost, the losing dice were tossed. By bridges all were crossed, nowhere to go. Now you're here, now I know just where I'm going. No more doubt or fear, I found my way. For love came just in time. You found me just in time and changed my lonely life that lovely day. Love came just in time. You found me just in time and changed my lonely life that lovely day. You changed my life that lovely day.
Willie Nelson's version of Just in Time, which is written and first recorded in 1956. Now, I usually talk here about things, perhaps entertaining things that have gone on over the last week that things might interest you. I think, well, if he went there and enjoyed it, perhaps I would. Well, I'm trying to think. A couple of things. I went to see Alan Davis live at the Michael Fowler Centre on Saturday night. You know, Alan Davis from things like QI, of course, and Jonathan Creek. And we thought, well, let's go and see him. Well, Yeah, very popular. Lots of people there. And he was funny. I'm not the best. I'm not the best of audiences when it comes to comedians. I seem to have a sense of humour that I can crack up on very rarely on a few people and other people. Well, he raised a smile, but there was people behind us having hysterics. It's all a matter of taste and what you like, isn't it? Anyway, very pleasant night out. The other thing that's happening to me, this lady, is I'm coming up for a big, big birthday in October. And if I hate to say it, but it's 80. And so, of course, I'm in for this new license business. I've got to get a new license in for then. And it's a little bit more complex this time. There's a sort of an aptitude test, I suppose you might call it, a physical test to measure your actual physical health. And then, all being well, walk along to the AA office and say, please give me a new license. Well, I had the aptitude test, I'll call it, last week with the nurse at the local doctor surgery here. I was a little bit nervous. I'd heard about it, and I knew that one of the things was that they give you something which tests your memory, and it could be something like somebody's name and address, and they give it to you twice, you repeat it, and then you have to keep thinking, remembering it and repeating it during over the next 15 minutes or so as you're there. I was a bit worried about this, but my test on this one was to, the lady ran it, read out about a list of, I don't know, 15, 20 words, and she read them twice. Then I had to repeat them if I could remember them, and then this was repeated again a couple of times over the next few minutes. Well, I don't like that sort of thing. I'm not very good at remembering lists. But I didn't do too badly. I didn't, and I don't know if you've heard of it, but I know when I've looked into memory joggers and how to improve your memory, there is this system whereby you pick a familiar place like your own home, and you walk in the front door and you walk through it, and you pick certain places because they're very familiar to you. And when you try to remember a list, each item on the list you place in one of these places. And it does seem to work. You need to practice it a bit. So I tried it on Tuesday when I had this thing. So I thought, right, when I go into the house, I'll start the front door, then there's the hall stand and the stairs down, a few stairs down, then into the kitchen. And so on that basis, I've been able to remember the first few words. So apple, ink, nail, bird, book. Because I put an apple by the front door. I put a bottle of ink on the hall stand. There's a nail on the floor at the top of the stairs. It seemed to work anyway, so I got through. So first step, and I think physically, well, I'm still here, I'm still alive, so fingers crossed for that. So there we are. That's this business about getting a license when you're knocking on a bit. Let's go back to music, because you don't want to bore you with too much with things like that. So my next track is, this is 1956 again, and it's I've Grown Accustomed to Her Face, and the track event is by The Temptations. I think you'll like this one.
I've grown accustomed to the tune. She whistles night and noon. Her smiles, her frowns, her ups and her downs are second nature to me now. Like breathing out and breathing in.
Breathing out and in.
I was serenely independent and content before we met. Surely I could always be that way again. And yet I've grown accustomed to her looks, accustomed to her voice.
The Great British Breakfast. Well, what do you conjure up on that? You would just think of a big plate full has got sausages and bacon and probably tomatoes and eggs on the top. And for a long time, this has been frowned at, I think, because of the dietary considerations. But it's coming back into fashion, apparently. And Somerset Maugham once said, to eat well in England, you should have breakfast three times a day. And so it's getting more and more popular. For example, now we've heard about Wetherspoons, haven't we? Even out here, we've heard about Wetherspoons pubs, and it apparently serves over 40 million breakfasts across 810 branches, including one in Spain, every day. 40 million breakfasts across 810 branches every day. Blimey! So The main ingredients, as you're probably aware, of Great English Breakfast are, so whilst the key ingredients of a cooked breakfast, bacon, eggs, sausage, beans, tend to remain constant, there are some regional differences across the British Isles. Mushrooms and tomatoes are sometimes optional extras, and while you're likely to be served black pudding in England, over the border in Scotland and Northern Ireland, they're just as likely to be red or white pudding. Wales and parts of the West Country, meanwhile, they love a bit of lava bread with their brekkie, made from an edible seaweed like the kind used in sushi. Breakfast tastes have also changed as the ethnic and demographic makeup of the UK has evolved, so you can get a little bit of Indian food creeping into an English breakfast now. I seem to remember, now I'm probably going back 20, 25, 30 years, no longer than that, that we went into a hotel and you were offered an American breakfast or a continental breakfast, and the great British fry up breakfast had gone. If you wanted a British, if you thought you wanted sausage and bacon and everything, you had to order an American breakfast, which I thought was rather strange. So it's nice to know that it's back in all its glory. And there are, talk about having breakfast, there are some rather posh versions, and I'll read you one after we've listened to Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Armstrong and a track from 1937, Let's Call the Whole Thing Off. It's another track from George and Ira Gershwin.
You say either, I say either, you say neither, and I say neither, either, either, and either, neither, let's call the whole thing off. Yes, you like potato, and I like potato. You like tomato, and I like tomato. Potato, potato, tomato, tomato. Let's call the whole thing off. But oh, if we call the whole thing off, then we must part. And oh, if we ever part, then that might break my heart. So if you like pajamas, I like pajamas. I'll wear pajamas, give up pajamas. For we know we need each other, so we better call it off. Oh, let's call the whole thing off, yeah.
You say laugh. And I say laughter, you say after, and I say after. Laughter, laughter, after, after. Let's call the whole thing off. You like vanilla, and I like vanilla. You sarsaparilla, and I sarsaparilla. Vanilla, vanilla, or chocolate, strawberry. Let's call the whole thing off. But oh, if we call the whole thing off, then we must part. And oh, if we ever part, then that might break my heart. So if you go for oysters and I go for oysters, I'll order oysters and cancel the oysters. For we know we need each other, so we better call the calling. And you say either.
You say neither.
And you say neither.
Either.
Either.
And either.
And neither.
Let's call the whole thing off. Oh, yes. You like potato.
And you like potato.
You like tomato.
And you like tomato.
Potato.
Potato.
Tomato.
Tomato.
Let's call the whole thing off.
And oh, if we have a button, that might break my heart.
Oh, so if you like pajamas,
I like pajamas,
I'll wear pajamas.
You got pajamas.
For we know we need each other, so we better call the calling of all.
Let's call the whole thing off.
Oh,
Fitzgerald and Louis Armstrong. Well, with words like that, then there have obviously been many parodies over the years, and I've picked one out here for you. This was recorded for an Amnesty International concert, and it features John Bird and John Fortune, and it's Let's Call the Whole Thing Off.
Yes, thank you. You're the last for the audition. You did say you could read music.
Yes, I can.
Can you sight read music?
Yes, thank you.
Would you mind just sight reading that? Just take your own time.
I say potatoes, and you say potatoes. I say tomatoes, and you say tomatoes. Potatoes, tomatoes. Let's call the whole thing off. You say pajamas, and I say pajamas. You say Bahamas, and I say Bahamas, Bahamas, pajamas, Bahamas, Bahamas.
Look, I'm sorry, I just can't see what's wrong with this relationship.
Well, I'll apologise now, because if you haven't heard that version before, I can guarantee it's going to come back to you at various times through the rest of your life. It's just one of these little earworm things that will stick there. Anyway, funny stuff. So, yes, if you want to really slap up breakfast, and I'm not necessarily calling it English breakfast, I don't think, but you can get this in the Four Seasons Hotel in Park Lane, and this is their Pavilion Immaculate Kitchen produces this, presided by head chef Yannick Aleno, one of the world's most celebrated, holding 18 Michelin stars across his 21 restaurants around the globe. A spirit of relaxed elegance pervades as suave, designer-suited staff serve a procession of five decadent courses, beginning with an amuse-juice to sip alongside a plate of finest viennoiserie. Oh dear. A sublime lobster flatbread is followed by an exotic Kheer pudding, and then comes the chef's weekly special, the most perfect eggs royale ever tasted, a Mayfair muffin smothered with creamy smoked salmon and hand-piped hollandaise sauce, topped with a generous optional dollop of caviar. Alcohol-free bubble elixir is the suggested pairing. But if it's a weekend and you're not too worried, then you could have just a nice glass of champagne. And the pièce de résistance is the ultimate French toast, served with caramelised hazelnut and whipped cream, which is like eating sweet air, as soft as a cloud, at only about $140. So there we are. That's your breakfast as you go back to your bowl of cornflakes. And now it's 1933, and Harold Arlen and Ted Koehler wrote Let's Fall in Love. And like most of the tracks are from the Great American Songbook, lots and lots of people recorded, including people like Rod Stewart, George Benson, Cliff Richard even. And this particular version I've got for you was recorded in 2007 by Art Garfunkel.
Shouldn't we fall in love? Our hearts are made of it. Let's take a chance. Why be afraid of it? Let's close our eyes and make our home paradise. Little we know of it, still we can try to make a go of it. Each other to be or not to be, let our hearts discover. Let's fall in love. Why time for it while we are young. Let's fall in love.
This article recently, and although it's about death, I found it perhaps a little bit, I don't know, comforting. Have you ever heard of terminal lucidity? Because I certainly hadn't. This is the tale, and it's a true tale, about a person whose grandfather died, and it said the grandfather was described as a very British gentleman type who had served as a captain in the army during the Suez Canal crisis. In his final weeks, he was confined to bed and receiving round-the-clock care. His grandson recounted how, on the day of his passing, the grandfather requested a cup of tea, drank it, and then rose from his bed with a sudden spring of energy. The carer informed the grandson that his relative had announced, "Right, I want to show you exactly what I wish to be buried in," before making his way to the wardrobe to retrieve a suit. Well, the carer tried to get him back to return to bed, but he was determined, and he picked out the suit and clothes he wanted and placed them down on the bed and explained to her how it should be. He then walked back to the bed, but before getting in it, he collapsed on the floor. Well, the carer rushed over to him, and he said to her, "Right, if it's all good with you, I'm going to go now." She looked at him and said, "Yes, it's fine, you can go." And then he died as she held him. Obviously, the grandson was devastated that his last grandparent had died. He was a very British gentleman type. He always dressed perfectly, and people would often comment upon how smart he looked throughout his life. Oh, there's a little story from somebody else, similar sort of thing. Happened to my dad, this person said. He was in the end stages of motor neurone, was out of it for a few weeks, then suddenly woke up, ate a banana, and said people he knew who had already died had come to visit him to tell him about the afterlife, and he was excited to go there. He passed a few hours later. So, what is terminal lucidity? According to Cleveland Clinic, terminal lucidity is a surge of clarity and energy in a person who is dying. Although it doesn't happen to everyone, it sometimes occurs in people with brain diseases that cause irreversible mental decline like dementia. Well, there you are. I don't know what you want to make of that. Back on the music front, in 1932, Ray Noble wrote Love is the Sweetest Thing. And I've got a track here by Rick Nelson, who recorded it in 1964. Other people like Rod Stewart and Jules Holland, the Pasadena Roof Orchestra, Ray Conniff, all sorts of people have recorded it. But here's this track from Rick Nelson.
Love is the sweetest thing. What else on earth could ever bring such happiness to everything as love's old story? Love is the strangest. No song of a bird's upon the wing shall in our hearts so sweetly sing than love's old story. Whatever heart may desire, whatever fate may send, this is the song that never will tire. This is the song without end. Love is greatest thing, the oldest yet the latest thing. I only hope that fate may bring This is the song without end. Love is the greatest thing, the oldest yet the latest thing. I only hope that fate may bring love story to you. Love is the sweetest thing.
I think there was a time when the weird ideas of a few wacky individuals were restricted to strange magazines that you probably bought in somewhere in America, in redneck states of America, and where people are always talking about aliens landing and things like that. But of course, nowadays with the spread of the internet and everything, they think anybody can go on the internet and spread weird stories to all sorts of people. So there's a bit of a strange thing. Outrageous theories claiming that Russian President Vladimir Putin has somehow lived through two world wars may at least go some way to explaining his despicable behaviour in the 21st century. Keen-eyed history buffs have unearthed photographs from 1920 and 1941, each depicting individuals bearing an uncanny resemblance to the Kremlin chief. Both images show men with a sharp nose and thin lips, closely mirroring Putin's features from his younger years, and dressed in military uniform. The black and white photographs are enough to make onlookers do a double take, as they bear a remarkable likeness to a younger Putin. The earlier 1920 image would have been taken just 2 years after the conclusion of the First World War. While seemingly far-fetched, the photographs, which first came to public attention in 2015, have done little to stop conspiracy theorists from musing over whether Putin may have access to time travel technology. I honestly. A further theory, allegedly championed by devoted admirers of the former KGB agent, suggests the images point to Mr. Putin's supposedly immortal qualities. And in fact, supporters of the thesis that Putin is almighty and immortal have launched a story that their president is a mythical creature that resides on our planet for hundreds, if not thousands, of years. That former Russian servicemen bear resemblance to present-day figures living in modern-day communist Russia should hardly prove surprising. Nevertheless, it sometimes does appear as if Putin has been around forever, having shaped Russia's leadership since 1999. Well, that's a horror story if ever you want one, and one wonders what Mr. Trump would make of that if he read something like that. Well, I think we'd all agree that George Gershwin, for example, was not immortal, but his music surely is. And so he wrote Love Walked In 1937, it's still going strong here, and Frank Ifield recorded it in 1965.
Shadows away. Love walked right in and brought my sunniest day. One magic moment and my heart seemed to know. Love said hello, though not a word was spoken. One look and I forgot the gloom of the past. One look and I had found my future at last. One look and I had found a world completely new. When love walked in with you, magic moment, and my heart seemed to know that love said hello, though not a word was spoken. One look, and I forgot the gloom of the past. One look, and I had found my future at last. One look, and I had found a world complete.
the very distinctive sound of Frank Ifield. Continuing this sort of rubbish that I've been reading about Putin, here's a little article called Time Travel, and a photo taken in 1936 in Brooklyn, God, it had to be America, wouldn't it, has left conspiracy theorists convinced that time travel is real after a man was spotted appearing to hold a mobile phone decades before the device was invented. At first glance, this appears to be an entirely unremarkable snapshot of a New York City street captured in 1936. The photograph depicts a street scene in Brooklyn's Union Square, but one individual caught on camera appears to be doing something wholly extraordinary. The man visible in the foreground of the shot appears to be holding a mobile phone to his ear, a device that would not exist for another 5 decades. Well, you won't be surprised to know the discovery has sent conspiracy theorists into a frenzied search for answers, with some asserting that the individual in question is nothing short of a time traveller. This was reported in the Daily Star. I'm not quite sure where I found it. I did see a copy of the photograph. Well, okay, so he's got his hand to his ear. Well, possibly had a pocket watch, and he wasn't quite sure if it was ticking or not, and so he gave it a shake and put it up to his ear, because that's all he's doing. His whole thing is based on that. I don't think you could actually see anything physical in his hand anyway. I don't know. Bradley Walsh, well, if you're a fan of The Chase, you'll know, I don't need to tell you who Bradley Walsh is, and you will know from comments on there between him and the Dark Destroyer that they often refer to his capacity to sing. And of course, yes, he has. He's got a very fine singing voice and has recorded various albums with typically sort of material from the Great American Songbook, the ballad stuff. And so, 1950, Frank Lurser wrote Luck Be a Lady, and today, here in 2026, you're going to hear Bradley Walsh sing it.
Luck be a lady tonight. Luck if you've ever been a lady to begin with. Luck be a lady tonight. Luck let a gentleman see how nice a dame you can be. I've seen the way you've treated other guys you've been with. Please be a lady with me. A lady never leaves her escort. You know, it ain't fair. Oh, it ain't nice. A lady doesn't wander all over. Let's keep this party polite. Never get out of my sight. Stick with me, baby. I'm the guy that you come in with. Luck be a lady tonight. Gentlemen see how nice a dame you can be. 'Cause I've seen the way you treated other guys you've been with. So please be a lady with me. A lady never leaves her escort. You know, it ain't fair. Oh, it ain't nice. A lady doesn't wander
We all have habits, don't we? Good ones and bad ones, hopefully mostly good ones. But somebody's taken the trouble to do a survey about the habits that Brits save for when the rest of the house is asleep. The house finally goes silent and you finally breathe, and millions of Brits are carving out time for themselves while the rest of the household is asleep. Well, according to new research, around 81% are happiest during these quieter times of day when they have space for favourite habits or hobbies. Around 51% identify as early birds, while 29% say they're night owls. Top habits include scrolling social media after saying, "I'm going to sleep now." That's 68% of us do that. Sneaking snacks they don't have to share. 67%, that's a goodie. And reading uninterrupted, 65%. Women were far more likely than men to keep scrolling after bedtime, 74% of them versus 61% of us blokes. While Gen Z emerged as Britain's biggest night owls, with 44% saying they're at their best after dark. So here we are then. So here's Britain's top 10 off-peak habits. Number one, watching TV or streaming shows once everyone else has gone to bed. And 78% do that. Number two, having a cup of tea or coffee before anyone else is awake. 78%. Number three, secretly scrolling social media after saying they are going to sleep. 68%. Number four, sneaking in a treat, takeaway or snack they don't have to share. 67%. A takeaway? Do people actually sort of sneak in a takeaway at night and have a pizza come delivered at 2 o'clock in the morning or something? Number five, squeezing in household chores before work. 66%. Oh, wow. Number six, reading a book without anyone interrupting them. 65%. I can understand that. Having a late night bath or shower just for some uninterrupted peace. 64%. And, oh, dancing or singing around the house when nobody else is there, 63%. Listening to their favourite music or podcast as loud as they want, 62%. I bet the neighbours appreciate that. And number 10, catching up on work so the next day is easier, 62% doing that. Pretty much all 60% all the way there. So anyway, that's habits. I'll leave you to analyse your own habits and when you indulge them. Because I'm going to move on to music, and this is the Lullaby of Broadway, and this was written in 1935 by Harry Warren and Al Dubin. Recorded by various people. I found a track by Connie Francis, but this is one, obviously Rod Stewart and Jules Holland recorded an album of this sort of music in 2024, and this is their version of A Lullaby of Broadway.
Listen to the lullaby of Broadway, the hippery and ballyhoo, the lullaby of Broadway. The rumble of the subway train, the rattle of the taxis, the daffodils who entertain at Angelo's and Max's. Where a Broadway baby says goodnight, it's early in the morning.
Her flat until
I moved the style of music on this programme across to the Great American Songbook several weeks ago now, and generally speaking, I think it's gone down reasonably well. So I was very interested to see this article here about radio. And if you're familiar with Radio 2, if any of you out there came from the UK, then you'll know that Radio 2 is an ongoing super-duper programme. Radio 1 always caters for the young people and out-and-out pop and very modern music. Radio 3 and Radio 4 are much more sort of cultured and classical. But Radio 2 is the popular sort of stuff with some very, very popular DJs, people like Terry Wogan and Ken Bruce over the years. So there's an article here, Ken Bruce, who was a DJ for the... It was the morning programme is the big one, the morning programme is what everybody wants to do. And he was apparently said that BBC bosses have got it wrong at Radio 2, because Radio 2, they're always trying to attract the younger listeners. And this has gone on for years and years and years. And these people come in and say, oh, no, we've got to have younger people. We want the youth. We want the youth. And it doesn't work because the youth don't want to listen to Radio 2. They've got Radio 1. They've got Gen Z don't want to listen to Radio 8. Probably they want to. They download all their music, maybe. So I think now this is Vanessa Feltz, who was also a presenter. And I think this, I copied this out and I missed it a bit. But I think she said, I love doing handovers with Ken Bruce at Radio 2. In the 3 minutes before we were live, Britain's favourite broadcaster would vent his irritation with the station's idiotically obsessive mission to attract younger listeners. He couldn't understand why bosses didn't value the millions of devoted folk already happily tuning in. Ken bewailed the incomprehensible decision to import jarring music from Radio 1 and inflict it on an audience who would have been far happier with Johnny Mathis and Matt Monro. Ooh, who are you listening to on my programme now? Now comfortably catering for his loyal fans on gorgeous Greatest Hits Radio, Ken says with his usual common sense, We know who we're talking to. We know what they want to hear, and we deliver that. So they said, yeah, Ken delivers the winning formula. Value your audience and give them what they enjoy. Why don't BBC bosses get it? And I thought, well, yeah, now I've had no feedback. I don't hear anything. But I just thought, let's try a different style of music. I've not had any complaints. And somebody did say that according to the stats that we get from podcasting and things like that, that this program is not doing too badly. But I haven't seen them with my own eyes, so I don't know. But anyway, I am going to carry on and persevere. So the next track we're going to listen to is from 1924, going back a bit. George and Ira Gershwin again. They were writing for a long, long time. And it's called The Man I Love. Now, there's a great track, a great version of this by Barbara Streisand, I know. But I came across this one by Kate Bush, 1994. And you don't come across Kate Bush's name very often associated with these things. So it was interesting to hear that she had a go with this sort of ballad. So let's see what you think of this one.
My way, I'll do my best to make him stay. He'll look at me and smile, I'll understand, and in a little while he'll take my hand. And though it seems absurd, I'd never roam. Who would you? And someone else above. I'm waiting for the man I love.
And the very lovely Kate Bush brings us to the end of yet another programme in the Great Tracks and Sidetracks series. I'm Peter Fleming, and you've had the pleasure of, I hope, the pleasure of my company for the past 57 and a bit minutes. And I'll be back next week with more American Songbook and more, hopefully, unusual artists for you. Until then, look after yourselves. Have a great time. Bye for now.
Thank you. This programme was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the Access Media website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.